Our next focus is achieving compliance through stakeholder networks. We have two speakers today tackling this topic, one that we maybe haven't touched on much before at an NFAC conference. Our first is Daryl Dalton, the registrar for the Alberta Veterinary Medical Association. Daryl is on the NFAC board and the executive, representing provincial farm animal councils across Canada. Come on up, Daryl.
Thanks, Susan. Just to prove that I was attentive and listening this morning, I'm going to start off with a sincere and heartfelt apology. So I was listening to Jeff. I know Susan said that my topic is going to be achieving compliance through stakeholder networks, but I'm afraid that that's not going to be kind of how it's going to come off. So I can hardly wait till Kristen speaks after me to hear what I actually should have been speaking about. I'm here to actually talk about some events and things that are going on in Alberta, and I guess probably more appropriately, my talk would be called The Ramblings of an Alberta Veterinarian. There we go. So I'm here to talk about the Alberta perspective and, as I said, some of the things that are going on within the province. There's a lot of really, I think, exciting things that are happening, and they're all starting to interconnect and become a network. And it certainly is not any kind of an orchestrated approach. I'd love to be able to stand here and say that we've planned all of these things to happen and they're occurring step by step as we had planned them, but unfortunately that's not true. It's more of an evolution of what's happening and hopefully a view of what we're looking for the future for Alberta, you know, and specifically concerning animal welfare. And of course, I can't be from Alberta without showing a picture of mountains and horses, so there we have it. I'm part of the AFAC, or the Alberta Farm Animal Care, and Crystal talked about the Ontario version of AFAC this morning. We started a little later in 1993, and it was started by producers, and it was meant to be producers being responsible for the humane animal care of livestock in Alberta. They wanted to have a collective voice, and they wanted to get together all of the different commodity groups and be able to have that voice in the province. So there's a number of board members on AFAC, and I'll let you read those there, and they manage everything from beef producers, hog producers, turkeys, all the different feather groups. University of Calgary is represented, lambs, the whole gamut. Also, we have some active members of AFAC, which include some of the minor species as well, which would include the elk, the goats, bison, that sort of thing. So it's a fairly active group, and when we have a meeting, it's they're typically fairly large meetings, and there's good representation from all of the different commodity groups. We also have our provincial partners, and that would include the farm animal care groups, the farm and food care from Ontario, the British Columbia Farm Animal Care Group, the Saskatchewan Group, and then we're also part of NFAC as well. So any, and this is my commercial here, any province that doesn't have a farm animal care group, I would highly recommend that you look at forming one, because I think they're certainly very, very useful. So as part of the NFAC, or AFAC, sorry, part of their function, besides being an advocate for the farm animal groups, was they started what was called the Alert Line. And this was supposed to be producers helping producers. Now, it was a 24-hour telephone line that was set up, and anybody could phone in if you had a concern about a producer. And it was meant to be a line that was bypassing the provincial SPCA. People seemed to feel that they were reluctant to phone the SPCA on their neighbor, but they would certainly phone a group that would look into their concerns. So, you know, if somebody would phone this line, there would be a person answering the phone and would make contact with producers or producer groups or a group of producers from within AFAC and go out and look at the problem. So if somebody was phoning in about their neighbor's beef production unit, then a beef producer would go out and talk to the person and see if there was something that could be done. And this was all very consensual in that the producers would not go out to talk to the producer if he didn't want that group to come and talk to him. But typically, as we know, that most of the problems in animal welfare stem from either financial distress or mental problems on that farm. So a lot of the time, the help could be rendered through AFAC and the alert line, and sometimes not. AFAC also worked on their alert line to educate the public, because the public would phone in and have complaints about, you know, really severe things like cows with snow on their back in the wintertime. And so, you know, we'd have to explain that, you know, that's a normal phenomenon and they're well insulated and it's not such a bad thing. So those are the kind of things that we dealt with. Now, people going out on alert line calls also had a very strict guideline as to things that they could talk about and look at and things that they couldn't. If they went out there and there was dead or dying animals or animals in severe distress, that automatically became a call that was turned over to the SPCA. So that worked quite well. However, as the alert line was going on, they found that there was a need for veterinary input into some of these farms. So the Livestock Care Veterinary Program was started, and that was a group of veterinarians that was a veterinarian, Dr. Ray Fenton from Southern Alberta, and he was the one veterinarian that looked after the entire province as far as providing veterinary consultation to the alert line. A few years back, Ray decided that, 40 years in the business was probably long enough and that maybe he should retire, and so he did. And as a result, we went out to the veterinary community and gathered a group of veterinarians that would be interested in working with the alert line. So that's what we have today, is a group of veterinarians. So they provide consultative services where needed on alert line calls. They're not acting as the farm veterinarian, and they're not there to treat any animals. They're looking to, you know, gain compliance, get people into line with what would be normal. So there's a compliance word, and now I've met my title. So the alert line has been going for a number of years now, and we're looking to actually hopefully improve the alert line, and where we've started calling it the AVERT line, which is the Animal Welfare Veterinary Emergency Response Team. It has a much larger scope, this is where our vision is, that it would have a much larger scope than the alert line, and it actually stemmed as a result of the ABVMA euthanasia program. So even though we're looking to have the alert line, or AVERT line, which would be larger than the alert line, we always recognize that there is always going to be a need for something similar to the alert line through AFAC. So our feeling is that the AVERT could also serve as the alert line as well. And there's a number of different provincial agencies that could benefit from this. So we consider the AVERT line to be the alert line on steroids. So hopefully I can talk about the AVERT from here on and not get confused. So as I said, this all started from the ABVMA euthanasia project. So in 2001, the ABVMA restarted a project that we had started earlier to develop a discussion paper on euthanasia methods in farm animals for veterinarians. And it seemed like a fairly simple task because the paper had already been started and we thought we could just whip this off in no time. Well, unfortunately, the project grew and became quite a large deal. So we were looking at the non-traditional methods of euthanasia in farm animals. And for veterinarians, the traditional method is a lethal injection or a 308 or a 3030. Those seem to be the traditional methods, but there's a number of other methods of euthanasia that veterinarians either are unfamiliar with or have not been taught in veterinary school. So this paper discusses a lot of those issues. That would be gunshot, captive bolt, CO2, electrocution, that sort of thing. But it was meant as a guide for veterinarians, and it was funded through the Growing Forward program. So as we were working through this, we had a phone call from the provincial government, and were asked if we would also consider looking at the purchase of some euthanasia devices, some captive bolt euthanasia devices. So at that point, we looked at purchase of those, and we did that. And we were also asked if we would look at the possibility of developing memorandum of understanding with the different municipalities to get some sort of a network of veterinary care or emergency veterinary response within the province. And so that's what we did. We went out and purchased 25 of these. They're called a cash kit, and they're a single-stage euthanasia device produced by Ackles and Shelvolk, which is, I believe, an English company. They're a single stage in that there is no secondary stage required. Up to this point, any euthanasia devices that were used or captive bolt devices would require a secondary step being pithing or exsanguination. And this device apparently is only requires the single stage. There's a number of different heads involved. There's a non-penetrating and then there's a couple of penetrating heads, and they come with 5 different charge levels. So you can do everything from chickens to bison with these units by just interchanging the heads and using the appropriate charge. So they're quite flexible. We were able to purchase 25 of these through the Growing Forward project and supply them to 25 different clinics throughout the province. The provincial government also purchased 25 of these units, and they have a program it's accredited veterinarians for emergency slaughter. So if you have an animal that requires to be slaughtered on the farm, you can phone these veterinarians. They can come out, do the antemortem inspection, and then euthanize the animal, and it can go into the food chain. The Alberta SPCA also purchased 6 of these units. So in total, we have 56 of these units in the province, and they are very well spread out across the province. So we're quite happy with that. The Alberta SPCA, and this is kind of, this is where I start to ramble here. We talk about the AVERT program, but I think the Alberta SPCA could benefit from the AVERT program as well. We know that through the alert line, the veterinarians have been able to go out and do investigations, or not investigations, but they go out and do farm calls and help producers. And we thought, well, why couldn't those same veterinarians be the ones that go out and help the Alberta SPCA? Rather than having, you know, 2 separate groups, it could be the same group of veterinarians. Now, a veterinarian couldn't be the one that's doing the helping on the farm for AFAC and then turning around and being the investigating veterinarian or consulting veterinarian for the Alberta SPCA, but they could certainly come from the same group. So that was one of our thoughts. Another place that we thought the AVERT team of veterinarians would be useful would be with the RCMP. At any given time in Alberta, they tell us that there are 40,000 animals on transport trucks somewhere in the province. So with that many animals traveling per day, incidents do occur. And so we always know that veterinarians are being called out to traffic incidences. And there's loose and free-roaming animals that are involved in the incidents. So we're looking at being able to have the AVERT line veterinarians. If they're a veterinarian or a practice that has one of these cash kits, certainly if animals need to be euthanized right at the scene, that's far more preferable and less dangerous than having an RCMP officer pull out his service revolver and try to euthanize animals. I don't know who's had experience with the RCMP euthanizing animals, but it's typically not a pretty scene. They're not trained, and as one officer told me, we're not trained to shoot animals, we're trained to shoot people, and it's different. So typically, that's heartwarming, isn't it? Yeah. Typically, though, the RCMP going out to shoot livestock, they shoot them too far or too low in the head. They're mashing sinuses, and they're not causing any sort of insensibility or quick death for these animals. And we hear stories of 8 and 9 shots being taken before the animal is actually dead. So the RCMP are really very supportive of this as well. This group would also be useful for investigations involving animals, criminal cases, and criminal abuse cases. So something else that we have in Alberta is the AFAC Emergency Trailer Project. The first, and these are emergency response trailers, the first time that we had one of these was in the county of Red Deer, which is halfway between Calgary and Edmonton. The county, I guess, you know, they're on that major thoroughfare between Calgary and Edmonton, and they had had enough of animals running loose on the highway and decided they'd do something about it, so they put together an emergency response trailer. And AFAC picked up on this and thought it was such a good idea that we currently have 9 of these trailers throughout the province. And different municipalities have them along the major thoroughfares that they are typically transporting livestock. And they're great little trailers. In addition to that, there's a course at Lakeland College, which is out east of Edmonton, and it's a livestock handling equipment trailer course. And the main thrust behind that course is to teach people how to use these emergency trailers and what to do in the situations where you have one involved. So these are some of the trailers. This was at their grand launching when they were introduced to the province, the last 5 anyway. And it was coincidentally, shortly after these were launched, AFAC was holding their livestock care conference, and I'll do a blatant advertisement for that conference at this moment. If you are in Alberta in March and want to go to a great conference just like this one, come out to the AFAC Livestock Care Conference, because it's a great conference. Well, this past year in March, we had this monstrous storm that closed a bunch of highways, and I know it's nothing to you guys in Ontario, but we did have a 106 car pileup on the Queen Elizabeth II Highway between just actually south of Edmonton. And for us, that's a lot. I know on the QE1 or 4, whatever you guys have, that's just daily occurrence. But for us, it was a big deal. And being Alberta, of course, we had 2 Cataliners involved in that, and there was 2 of the emergency response trailers were dispatched and well utilized and paid their way at that time. So they're certainly available and utilized. I've got a list of the equipment that is available in one of these trailers, and if you're interested, come on up and see me later, and I can show you the list. But basically, it supplies a lot of the major things that you would think would need to be there. You know, there's a generator, cords, power equipment, you know, power tools for cutting through trailers, lights to for the generators to light up, because most of these things happen at night, it seems. There's hand tools, ropes, tarps, and panels and fencing, and that's probably one of the best things that these trailers carry, are the panels and fencing. In Canada, we do have the Canadian Veterinary Reserve, which is a project or a joint initiative between the Canadian Veterinary Medical Association and the Canadian Food Inspection Agency. And it's part of our national emergency management policy and plan. So they're meant to respond to animal health emergencies, such as a foreign animal disease or outbreaks or any kind of a natural disaster. And they have teams of private sector veterinarians that have gone through quite extensive training, and you know, if we have a foot and mouth disease outbreak in Canada, we should be fairly well set to at least start to deal with it. Unfortunately, right now that program is on hold for a lack of funding, as the federal government is sort of forever on hold for lack of funding. I shouldn't say that being in Ottawa, should I? But anyway. So the CVR operates on a national level, and they never have been activated. The closest they've come to being activated was the earthquake in Haiti in 2010. Unfortunately, the CVR would never ever be triggered for a for a provincial event, and we've shown that there are some provincial events that that are out there, and I'll talk about some of those. So we do have what we perceive as gaps in some of the preparedness that we do have. In Alberta, we do have provincially notifiable diseases, which are different than the federally notifiable diseases, and we have a longer list than the federal list is. And also, we have localized civil or civil emergencies that would never trigger the CVR. So we're concerned and think that the AVERT team possibly could become effective in situations like that. The first one was the H1N1 in 2009. Remember, that was the year of the swine flu. There was a carpenter had returned to the Red Deer area from a holiday in Mexico, and he came back with an upper respiratory infection. He was doing some work in a pig barn. That pig barn, eventually those animals came down with the H1N1. And it became, that was the first case we'd seen in Canada or Alberta, and it became quite a big deal. And nobody knew what to do with it. I mean, the animals got sick, most of them recovered, and it should not have been a problem. They should have gone into the food chain and nothing else said. But at that point, there was the media hysteria over H1N1, and it became a welfare issue, because these animals had nowhere to go. They had, they'd come and gone past slaughter weight, a lot of them. And so it became the decision of the provincial government to go out and euthanize these 3,000 animals. Well, all of a sudden you have provincial veterinarians, provincial employees that are either unprepared, unwilling, or just not up to helping euthanize 3,000 animals. So this would have been a situation where an AVERT group of veterinarians already trained with the cash kits could have gone in and aided the provincial government at that time. Moving a little later to the Slave Lake fires of 2011, and this was hugely disastrous. 7,000 people were evacuated from their homes. One-third of the town burned to the ground. So we're talking, probably 2,000 to 3,000 people without homes. And this was probably the first time the provincial government came to the realization that a social crisis such as the Slave Lake fire could also become a animal welfare crisis. Now, if we were to go back and look at Hurricane Katrina and a lot of the aftermath and the animal welfare issues following Hurricane Katrina, we would have known that we could expect the same thing in Alberta. The bottom line is that people will not leave their animals behind. And they proved the same thing in Slave Lake during the 2011 fires. They had people that would not leave or had to be forced out of their homes because they had livestock that they had. Now, if you had a two-horse farm and you could load your two horses on the horse trailer and drive away, not a problem. If you got 30 head on your farm and you've got a two-horse trailer, once you drove out of there, you're not going back. They had the RCMP on the highway stopping people coming back and whatnot. There's issues with dairy barns. These cows need to be milked twice a day. There was farmers sneaking through the barricades, around the barricades and whatnot, to get back to their farms to milk their cows. Some of them got back to the farms and realized that they have no electricity, and milking machines don't run well without electricity. They were fine if they had a generator, but if not, then they were in a wreck. The people that were leaving that didn't have livestock but had small pets realized that they could go to the local shelters, but the local shelters would not take Fluffy and Muffy. So that became an issue. What do we do with these? What do we do with these household pets? Because the they just will not take them into the shelters. So there's lots and lots of issues that need to be addressed as far as animal welfare is concerned. So through this whole thing, Alberta decided that they needed an emergency management agency, and they developed one, and their mandate is to look after the people of Alberta in the case of a civil emergency or disaster. And they're supposed to ensure that vital services are delivered to the people. This is a picture of the Kananaskis Emergency Services Unit. and lovely unit, and I'm certain that they don't look quite as good today as they did when this picture was taken, and that was because of the flooding in Canmore in 2013. So this is an aerial view of Cougar Creek taken in June, and I'm sure of you all heard of the flooding in Calgary and Canmore. Now, Cougar Creek, I asked one of the residents of Canmore, I said, so how big is Cougar Creek normally? And he said, well, it's not. I said, well, what do you mean? Well, Cougar Creek really isn't a creek. It's a floodway. And every 50 years, 70 years or whatever, it floods. And you get this big, broad, V-shaped fan of water that comes down from the mountains. Unfortunately, you know, it's been 70 years since that happened. So some developer thought, this looks like prime land. And it is gorgeous. It's a beautiful, beautiful spot. But there's hundreds of homes damaged and will be lost, you know, as a result of this non-existent creek that exists here. It's mind-blowing to see the effect of water. And, you know, at that point, the Trans-Canada Highway is four lanes, and it's a big major highway, and to see two of those four lanes just gone is pretty amazing. So also included with that flooding was the flooding in High River in Calgary, and we know that animals were involved there as well. Now, this is a picture of Kevin Yates and his 8-month-old cat, Momo. Now, Momo decided that she was way more smarter than Kevin, and she knew the way to land, and he's off to convince her that that's not the right way, we're going to go my way. So, and this picture, I think, became quite famous during the time of the floods. I was really impressed the way veterinary clinics and veterinarians opened up their hearts and their clinics and everything at that time. We virtually had very little issue with small animals and small animal problems at that time. Both of the veterinary clinics in High River were totally destroyed and are still not open today. There was not a lot of talk about the livestock, but talking to, once again, another producer, he said there were cattle that did drown along the Bow River, so that was an issue. So veterinary service could also be used there. This is my favorite. Hippos in the Bow. I don't know if it became widely known, but there the two largest hippos at the Calgary Zoo, there's a bull and a cow, and the bull was one barricade away from being in the Bow River. In Calgary, the Calgary Zoo sits on the St. George's Island, which is an island in the middle of the Bow, and it virtually was destroyed. The zoo, it's a great zoo, and I hope that they can get it back open again, but it was devastated. So hippos in the Bow is probably not a good idea. In Africa, they say that there's more animals killed, or more humans killed by hippos than any other animal in a year. So I don't think it would have gone over well with the fly fishermen in the Bow to have this bull hippo going through. The other thing that was quite interesting was they needed a spot to put the tigers during this crisis, and the only enclosed caged area that was large enough was the Calgary Remand Center. So there was tigers in the Remand Center as well. So you didn't want to be in jail for pickpocketing that week. So there is a large network, we feel, of agencies or groups that would be could use a network of veterinarians that would be able to respond to all these different kinds of emergencies. You know, the Alberta Agriculture and Rural Development, the Emergency Management, the RCMP, AFAC, the Alberta SPCA, the CVR, and some of the different municipalities. And so we're certainly looking to promote this, and this is the direction that we'd like to see the provincial government go, or the province of Alberta go to do this. So what are our next steps? You know, our biggest barricade right now is funding. In order to have this project move forward and remain sustainable, we need some money. So whether industry is going to stand up and supply money, I don't think that's the place it should come from. I would love to see the provincial government step up and say this is a valuable service for society, and we'd like to fund ongoing training and the sustainability of this group. It's going to take a lot of coordination between agencies, and there again, I think that's something that the provincial government could facilitate and do. And if other provinces would sort of take up this thought as well, I would love to see other provinces get together and do the same thing, because we think it's a good idea. Or if you have a better idea, we'd love to hear it, because we'll copy it. So thank you very much, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Maybe we'll just hold questions until Kristen's done. Okay, are you all right with that, Daryl? Great, thank you. Our second speaker addressing achieving compliance through networks is Kristen Kelderman, and she's a farm animal care coordinator with Farm and Food Care Ontario, and she's a U of G Aggie grad like many of you in the room.
Thank you, Susan, and thanks for inviting me here today. I'd just like to say, Darren, thanks for going first this afternoon. So I know my presentation kind of mimics a lot of what you said, so I know I'm not out to lunch on this topic today. So my name's Kristen, and I work with Crystal at Farm and Food Care, who you heard speak earlier this morning. And we're a relatively small organization in Guelph, so it's a very rarity that we actually come to meetings together. So her getting to hear me speak and me getting to hear her speak, you know, it's kind of, you know, no pressure this afternoon. So today I'm here to talk to you guys about, you know, I kind of took the topic as how does Farm and Food Care work together with other organizations in our province here in Ontario. So, next. There we go. So to begin with, I just want to give you guys, Crystal kind of went over the 101 of who Farm and Food Care is, and I'm going to tell you guys a little bit today, this afternoon, what we do. So at Farm and Food Care, we've adopted this three-pillar system. So our first pillar is advocacy and intelligence, keeping a bead and a pulse on what's happening in the industry. Our second pillar, doing the right thing, is what I'll talk a lot about today and what a lot of my work on the welfare agenda goes towards. So, you know, farmers, they're out there doing the right thing every day, taking care of their animals, taking care of the land, just doing the right thing. And then our third pillar, public trust and outreach, it's kind of our fun thing that we like to say, why we love our job, getting out and talking to people about who we are, what we do, food and farming, and answering questions. And Crystal touched a little bit on that this morning. So our approach at Farm and Food Care is kind of a three-step approach to identifying welfare issues. So first, you know, identifying and measuring an issue, trying to be as proactive as we can instead of, you know, always putting out fires like we feel we sometimes are. Second, you know, developing resources. I'll talk a little bit about this later on in my presentation. And some of you might be familiar with some of our resources that we've developed with a collaborative approach across industry and being practical about these resources. How does it help farmers? And of course, third, being part of the solution. It's easy to identify issues and problems, but how can we be part of the solution and kind of, you know, gain that industry stakeholder compliance and be, you know, across the value chain? So doing the right thing for farm animals. Something recently that we've started up at our organization is called our advisory council. So this is a group based on our membership of livestock producers, industry people. Anyone can be appointed to our advisory council. And basically what it is, we meet about four times a year, and it's a forum for dialogue. So talking about, you know, what's going on in the province, what sectors are facing what issues, having a conversation, and developing, you know, connections between the different industries, and you know, if something comes up in the beef industry, that they can call, you know, the poultry guys or the dairy guys and have a conversation to say, hey, you know, this is what I'm facing. Have you guys have any similar things that you've experienced, and just kind of learning from each other. It's a group that's really engaged and really passionate about animal care. So we get together, and it's right down to the wire. You know, we're getting into the intricacies, and we can talk our own language here and have those conversations at this table. It's a relatively new concept for us, so we're still growing and developing and kind of developing the relationships between people. So Darren talked about the alert line, and we have a similar service, I guess you would say, at Farm and Food Care called the Helpline. And the Helpline has been a large part of my job in the last couple of years. Kind of how the Helpline started was back in 1992, there was a hog producer that walked away from a barn with a couple hundred hogs. And unfortunately, industry was called in later to kind of clean up the issue. And after everything was kind of cleaned up, they kind of digressed and said, you know, how can we make this better? How can we have a service that will be useful for farmers? And you know, the reality was that his banker knew he didn't have any money. His feed guy knew he hadn't ordered feed in a couple weeks, and his neighbor knew that he was having family issues. But nobody wanted to call the SPCA and so tattle on him. So the Helpline was developed as a confidential farmer helping farmer approach. We don't have any legal authority. It's just a helpful approach that, you know, that peer helping peer. Farmers, you know, tend to interact well with other farmers in that practical sense. It's not developed for emergencies or cruelty or abuse. That's why we have the SPCA. We often position the Helpline as the step before the SPCA when we're dealing with thin animals, not starving animals. And ultimately, at the end of the day, it's good for the animals, it's good for the farmer, and it's good for the industry. So who responds in these situations? Our supply managed groups, dairy and poultry. Fortunately, we have their field staff on side with this. OCA, the Cattlemen's Association, we've trained up a team of retired farmers or active farmers or industry guys that want to be part of the solution across the province. Same thing on the pork side and other groups. And as well, on certain occasions, some more difficult occasions, we'll bring in some contract people. I like to call them our seasoned veterans, who've dealt with these issues before, and have a lot of experience in this side. So, what's covered under the Helpline? You can see here: beef, dairy, pigs, rabbits, goats, veal, chicken, and turkey. So, most of the large livestock commodities here in Ontario. What's not covered? We don't take horse calls, farm cats and dogs, or alternative species like alpaca and that kind of thing, for the mere reason that we don't have that Helpline rep, that resource of people on side for those groups. And the Helpline, I mentioned it is a peer helping peer education sort of resource. But we know that, unfortunately, there are situations where laws are broken, where animals are being abused, and the Helpline does work with the SPCA on these sort of, you know, cases that if we go out to a farm and our guys, you know, realize that it's a little bit past, you know, the scope of the Helpline, that we can contact the SPCA, and we work jointly on some of these cases on a case-by-case case basis. And we're not mandated to respond to the 1,400 farm animal calls that they do in a year. Typically, on average, we're doing about 15 to 30 calls for the Helpline, which for our guys, you know, it's a lot of our calls come from the beef side of things because beef cows are outside, people have questions, that kind of thing. So we're not, they're volunteer reps. It's not their full-time day job. So quickly, I'm just going to walk you through how the process goes about, just to give you an idea. So when we get the call into our office, the call is usually passed on to my desk if I'm available or one of my colleagues. We're all trained in the office to take these calls. So we have a standardized form that we ask tons of questions. And often, you know, I'm on the phone with this person asking them tons of questions, and I feel a little bit like a nosy person because I want to collect all the information I possibly can. My first question always is, you know, what's the animal? And they say, oh, it's a cow. I'm like, okay, is it a black and white cow or a brown cow? And, you know, sometimes brown cows, you know, they think Jerseys or beef cows, they can get a little confusing. And it's about having a conversation with these people. We try to screen them as much as we can before, you know, sending our reps out there. Because sometimes, you know, I've had a conversation with guys, they're like, oh, no, there's no water out in the field for the cows. And it's January. And they're like, well, you know, is there snow? You know, what's going on? Have you seen the whole field? That kind of thing. Just having a conversation and trying to flesh it out before, you know, we can get all the information as possible. You know, detailed location, that's not, can often be a challenge because sometimes they're driving by on the way to the cottage and they don't really know it's the fourth house from yada, yada, yada with the red barn on it. We try to get collect as much information, and it's an education piece for us, talking to the public, getting them, you know, to kind of decipher it in their own head as well. So we take down all this information in a little standardized form, and we collect the caller's details. So we don't get, you know, if the person's not going to give me their contact name and their information, I'm not going to send my guys out there. We do, we've had a lot of, recently actually, a conversation about, you know, how do you deal with malicious complaints or someone calling their neighbor constantly on them. We want to make sure, you know, that we're not getting into these, you know, community politics as much as possible, which does happen in rural communities, and we do get these calls at times, but I don't want to waste my guys' times out there in the field. We want to respond to the calls where we can make a difference. So we collect the caller's information, which remains confidential on my desk. No one else knows about that, and that I can call the caller back once a visit has been made. So then we pass the torch on, and we use our contacts and our references within the industry. So after I take down all of the information, I'm going to contact, you know, if it's a beef cow complaint, I'm going to contact OCA and, you know, pass the torch on to them, kind of a little relay approach. We're working together within this. The details of the report goes to them, and then they will then, you know, based on the geography, dispatch the correct rep in the area. So making the visit, as I mentioned, we try to collect all the information we can. You know, sometimes we get guys, you know, they know the fire number of the farm, they have the farmer's name, they know, you know, their email address, their brother's name, you know, where they were on the weekend. Other times, you know, they can be very vague. So making that initial contact via phone call or going to the farm just to say, hey, you know, we've gotten a complaint, wondering if we could come out. It's very, you know, kind of, you know, farmer helping farmer approach, and that we don't want to come out there with an authoritative approach. Making the visit, we have a little checklist for our guys when they go to the farm. Because often, you know, we get a call about, you know, oh, well, there's some skinny cows out there in the field. Can you go check it out? So, okay, walk the caller through, ask them a bunch of questions. But when the guys are actually on farm, maybe, you know, there might be a feed issue. It could be some breeding discrepancies, that kind of thing. So just making sure the guys go through the barns and the farm and be like, you know, the cows are outside, but the barn's over here. They can't get through the fence to get the feed, that kind of thing. Little things like that to help guide them through. Each farm visit is different, and our guys are really good at kind of, you know, handling each one and using their own judgment and their own recommendations. You know, is there follow-up needed? Did they go out there and there was no issue? Oftentimes, you know, it's a visual thing, it's a misconception, but it's good education piece to remind our guys that, hey, the public's out there, they are asking questions, they are interested, and our helpline reps going out there just to make a call and make that connection often just clicks in the producer's head at times. And making their own recommendations and judgment calls, these guys are credible. They're, you know, retired farmers or practicing farmers. They have a lot of respect within the industry, so we're not just sending out, you know, some university student grad at a school that's trying to tell, you know, my grumpy dad, old dad, dairy farmer, how to run his farm. So then we ask our guys, you know, to send us back a little kind of report because we do call the callers back. So letting them know oftentimes, you know, all they want to know that something was done, the animals are getting taken care of, there is a process in place for this. We have a standardized form that guys can fill out for us that's basically just a checklist, what time they visited the farm, yada, 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 because we did get a wide variety of, you know, farm visit was made on such and such a date, all the way down to, you know, War and Peace on what happened on this farm visit. So just making it standardized, we felt that that's kind of been a better process. And then calling the caller back. So it's my job once I get the report back to kind of go through it and give the caller, you know, just kind of an overview of what went on. I'm not giving them specific details or anything like that. And ultimately, from the time that the call is received to my, the first call is received to my desk, to when we call the caller back, we like to keep it within a two-week time period. So it's a fairly quick turnover because, you know, some of these instances, we go out there and we realize pretty quickly our guys can recognize that, hey, you know, this is past the scope of the helpline. There's legitimate issues here. We need to get someone else involved. So we want to keep it as tight as possible, but also recognizing that our guys are volunteers or they have other day jobs that they're working on, and that that can kind of come into context too. So just a little comparison here. How is the helpline different from the SPCA? You can see right here, both are confidential. The biggest difference is here, you'll see, we don't have any legal authority. It's a farmer helping farmer approach, recommendations, that kind of thing. Whereas the SPCA have legal authority and, you know, if they see fit, can press charges and go further on. And as I mentioned before, our helpline, you know, we're dealing with thin animals, not starving animals. Getting in there before where, you know, those recommendations can make a difference. And if they can't, then using our resources with the SPCA to get out there. And, you know, it's no surprise to all of us that, like parenting, animal care is a touchy subject. You're dealing with emotions, you're dealing with egos, feelings, etc. Oftentimes, these farmers, they're, you know, they're very passionate about their animals. And when they get a call saying that, you know, they're not up to snuff on, you know, their regular practices, it can be a little bit a balancing act. And when you have that emotion and logic, not always in these cases, you know, if you're dealing with a guy who's having family issues and he's a little bit older and he can't necessarily take care of his cows that he used to be able to, that balance tips. So his logic isn't always, you know, on that level playing field. So just keeping this in mind when we're going out to these calls. And recognizing that everyone responds differently. So our process of approach within the helpline, you know, awareness. Sometimes all it takes is a call to that producer, you know, them saying, hey, we've got a complaint through our helpline, you know, can I come out and have a look around your farm? That, you know, oftentimes will, the light bulb will go on and they'll be like, hey, you know what, I need to pick up my socks, you know, do a little bit better care with my animals. And there are different processes approached, sometimes education, some of our resources that we send guys out with, oftentimes, you know, it'll just seeing it on a piece of paper can sometimes be the light bulb moment. Everybody has a different process of approach, as well as going down into the enforcement area. Unfortunately, you know, some guys, that's what it takes, and that's where, you know, we work with the SPCA and their judgment calls on that as well. So doing the right thing, you know, for the right reasons. It's a continuous improvement, you know, when we're developing resources, as I mentioned here, these are just a selection of some of our resources that we have for farm animal care. We're always developing new things. How can we do a better job? How can we, you know, can we do this better? Is there a better process of approach for, you know, the farm side of things? And at Farm and Food Care, you know, we'd like to position ourselves as one-stop shopping for all of agriculture. We're the helpful experts, you know, with farmers, working with the SPCA, and with the public. And if we can't answer your question or be of use, then we'll find someone that we can that can help you with that. So as part of the compliance thing, I was asked to just kind of briefly go over some of the unique things that we have here in Ontario. So the MOUs with the SPCA, it's a memorandum of understanding, and so there's a currently DFO, CFO, and when I did my presentation back in September, OCA was still awaiting, but now that's recently been approved. And it's a collaboration, you know, within Ontario with the different farm animal groups with the SPCA. So it's done on a case-by-case basis, and it's a joint approach to responding to calls. So if, you know, DFO gets a call about some dairy cows, they'll work with the SPCA, call them, keep them in the loop on that, and done by a case-by-case approach. It's a fairly new approach that we've seen here in Ontario. DFO's had their MOU for, I think, 2009 or so, and we're seeing pickup from other industries now within the last little while. And, you know, farm and food care, we see this as a good approach. It's a good starting point where it will develop and grow into, we'll see into the future. And also SPCA training, we work, we do, you know, there's a two-week course here in Ontario for the officers that we're part of. We go and do a presentation and, you know, let them know about the helpline and how we can work together and utilize some of our resources and that kind of thing. It's hands-on. There's also a classroom component and joint, you know, with OMAF and University of Guelph, the whole collaborative approach that way. So switching gears a little bit now, what's farm and food care doing to actually improve animal care? So I'm just going to touch on a quick couple of projects that we've been involved in the last couple of years. And we've identified, you know, euthanasia, it's no surprise to a lot of us in the room, that this is a big gap and a challenge that farmers deal with on a regular basis. So at Farm and Food Care, we were part of the development of the Zephyr with the University of Guelph and OMAF. And up until recently, there's been, the science has been proven, but there's actually been no practical, you know, on-farm way for the farmers to access this. So we've worked with Bock Industries out of Pennsylvania. And these two devices here, the Zephyr and the TED, you can kind of see by the pictures, they're a modified nail gun design, so non-penetrating captive bolt. And basically what we're doing at Farm and Food Care is profiling these devices to farmers. So we were back in September, we were at the Outdoor Farm Show where a lot of farmers come. It's an innovative kind of place where farmers come to see what's the new technology, what's available. And at our booth, we profiled both of these guns. We had a hands-on exhibit. Farmers could, you know, hold them, play with them. You know, they're very hands-on type people. Shoot them into florist foam, not animals. And get a feel from them that way. So it's been part of our outreach to profile these and to bring them to the farm and to let guys you know it's an option. It's available out there, and they can kind of do with it. You know, it's not for everybody, but it is another option for farmers to consider. We've also recently updated our livestockwelfare.com. So this is a website that the FACTS groups jointly back in, I think, the 90s came together on to profile livestock research. So surprisingly, it's very old. If you looked at the old website, very old dated 1990s website, we've recently revamped it, given it a little bit of a facelift, and we're updating the information on here. So it's a great resource. And for it being such an old, outdated website, I was very surprised to see how much traffic we still get on it. So things like, you know, the research papers that we were talking about this morning, this is things where we can put links on, we can host different stuff, we have videos, fact sheets, producer resources, all kinds of things on here. So if you do have any information or something that you would like us to profile, I'm in the process of populating it right now, and it's kind of an ongoing thing. So let us know if you're interested in anything on that, with a focus on research on animal care issues. And we've also recently released a series of livestock training videos. So in the past, we've worked with Jennifer Woods to provide first responder courses. And Jennifer is fantastic for those of you that know her. She's really practical, really, you know, great, gives a really great course that police officers and firefighters can take. But she's one person. And, you know, what's the chances that one guy who responds to the truck rollover in downtown Toronto actually took Jennifer's course? You know, how do we make that reach a little bit broader? We've developed these quick little videos, training videos, to kind of go over the 101s of Jennifer's course. So animal handling, loose livestock, responding to accidents, and scene security. so that, you know, when we do get the calls from people looking for, you know, we get calls to the office from police officers, you know, after they've had a wreck or something. I'm like, do you have resources for this? You know, we really want to something to do at our training days. We have this. It's available on YouTube for guys to access easily. And, you know, it's broadening that scope for one person's great information. And Darren talked about AFAC's trailers that they have on the roads there, which is a fantastic approach that we've wanted to mimic here in Ontario, but due to projects and funding and that kind of stuff, we've recently done a joint project with Ontario Pork and the Canadian Swine Health Board to bring a little bit more awareness around emergency response. So we have this little utility van, which isn't as nice as your pickups and your trailers, but it's a starting point. It's a pilot project that we've joined with to kind of get out there. So when we do get calls from guys, you know, wanting to know, you know, what do we need at a livestock emergency or stuff, we can take this van out there and drive it around and that kind of stuff. So it's not exactly equipped to respond to emergencies yet, but doing a pilot project to get the good news story out there and that there's someone out there talking about it here in Ontario. Ideally, I think we'd like to mimic AFAC's six or seven trailers across the province, but we haven't quite gotten there yet. And Crystal mentioned our producer attitude study quickly this morning. This data hasn't actually been released yet, but we're working on it. We polled 400 producers, asking them, you know, concerns about animal care, also on the environment side, but different questions and stuff. So stay continued for that. We're going to be releasing that pretty soon. So just to wrap up here this afternoon, because I know everybody's getting a little sleepy this afternoon, Crystal mentioned some of our outreach to the public. That's a lot of what we do, talking to people and going out to things, and we have a lot of resources there. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but one of my favorite things that's recently become onto my job plate has been our creativity contest, and it's that little picture up in the top corner there. And basically what it is, it's a blank postcard that anybody can order through our organization, and we encourage kids to draw a picture on the front and then write a little something on the back about what they learned about agriculture. A lot of them come from the Royal Winter Fair, the International Plowing Match, farm tours. Some of our the farms that do agritourism in the area, they order these. And it's great to see them come in the mail from all sorts of kids. So this is my favorite one last year that actually sits on my desk right now. And it was from a grade one student from Brigden Fair. And they drew this little diagram here, and I'm not sure if they're pigs or they're, you know, Pac-Man, but they wrote, "Animals make noises," and I'm assuming that green stuff there might be the noise. I'm not really sure. But this one here is from 2 years ago, and it's my favorite one, not only because I'm visually challenged, and if I can draw a stick person on a good day, I'm doing all right, but this drawing here came from a grade 8 girl in downtown Toronto. And I just want to read you what she wrote really quickly. She said, "I drew this picture to show where our everyday food comes from and how important farmers are. We should really be thankful for their hard work. Unlike the olden days, now agricultural technology is more developed. Farmers are no longer using sickles, thank God. They use advanced machinery instead. And I think farmers are amazing." You know, I couldn't have said it better myself. So just wrapping up here, if you want to find out more about who we are, what we do, or any of the programs that I talked about today, you can Google us, find us. We've got lots of websites, social media, all that kind of stuff. And I'd just like to thank you all for your attention today. I'm not much of a rock and roll girl, but I am a dairy girl at heart. And, you know, I thought this image right here was very appropriate. I'm going home this afternoon to milk some cows with my dad, so I'm very excited to be back in Eastern Ontario. Thank you very much.